You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me today. We have a very wonderful program for you. I'm actually sitting at the New York Blood Center on Long Island. It's a wonderful place where people can donate blood. And people are talking more and more about the importance of donating blood, especially when we're feeling helpless about a lot of violence in the world. There are wonderful things that you can do, and one thing you can do to help save a life is give blood. I'm not giving blood today, although I promised myself I really need to up my donations, because a little over 10 years ago I got a whole bunch of transfusions when I was going through cancer treatment. I'm actually here with my 89-year-old dad, who's doing a little immunotherapy program, and I'm taking a break because I want to do my show right now. So here we are. I'm also freezing, and perhaps we'll find out in a little while why medical clinics are always kept so cold. Okay, I want to bring on my most wonderful guest, Dr. Joel Fuhrman. He's been on the show many times, and you know that I always call him my favorite doctor because he is. He's a board-certified family physician and nutritional researcher who specializes in preventing and reversing disease through nutritional and natural methods. Dr. Fuhrman is the research director of the Nutritional Research Foundation and the author of several books, including the New York Times bestsellers Eat to Live, Super Immunity, Eat to Live Cookbook, The End of Dieting, The End of Diabetes, and now what I think is his most book ever, the best book ever. Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us, and What We Can Do About It. Thank you so much for writing this and for being on my program today. How are you, Dr. Fuhrman?
Hi, Karen. I'm great. Good to talk to you today. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Can you tell me why medical facilities are always so freezing?
No, I don't even know why.
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time in them, unfortunately.
Have to wear coats? Have to wear those?
I don't know. I'm just sitting in a cold one right now.
You got a chance to read the whole book, the whole new Fast Food Genocide book yet?
I read the entire book, and I made a lot of
really?
Notes.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Good. I'm excited about it. It comes out in like 2 weeks now.
This is the best book you've written.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much. Yes. And I love them all.
It certainly is the book that's... You know, the other books are self-help books, you know, how to get rid of your heart disease, how to get rid of your diabetes, how to get rid of food addictions. But this is a book that can really become a book that changes America. And people have read it, they told me they couldn't put it down. And it's just so much information that's so important people know. People just got to know this information, you know?
Absolutely. You know, back in 1987, you know that John Robbins wrote Diet for a New America, and it was groundbreaking for its time and changed a lot of lives, and this is one of those books.
Thank you.
This connects the dots and goes so much further than nutrition. But, you know, this show is called It's All About Food because it is all about food, and it connects to so many things. But before we dig into the book, I have one question that I want to ask you. Now, you've always been promoting healthy eating and how we can reduce our risk of chronic diseases, which are the major cause of death today. Our friend, Dr. Michael Greger, he wrote How Not to Die a little over a year ago, telling us how not to die of chronic diseases. And I always hear you, I love it when you say, don't you want to live forever? Because don't we all want to have quality, long lives? But what I want to know is, what does healthy dying look like? If we're doing everything right, what would that look like? What do we die of?
Well, the same way animals die. Mostly our body gives out and we get weaker in our later years and hopefully pass away in our sleep very comfortably. There's some healthy people who, you know, and obviously, you know, I've been in practice for almost 30 years now, and I've had lots of patients that live to be centenarians, live to be in their hundreds. And look at, and a good example might be Scott Nearing, who wrote the book The Good Life, who passed away at 101. And he had a party. He invited all his family and friends and said he can't really work full-time anymore in the fields and cultivating his garden. He's getting too weak, and he wants to have a celebration for his life. And they had a big party and celebration, and he passed away. He was eating less. I think he kind of maybe facilitated his death a little bit but by not eating much. But he passed away at 101 in his sleep. And so many people have passed away without having a definitive cause of death, as do animals in the woods. They get to their end of their life, hopefully past 100 years, and they kind of like, and that's the thing we're talking about. We're talking about most Americans, their eyesight, their body aches, their mental faculties decline. They really have a horrible, poor quality of life in the last 10 years of life, where one thing that we want to achieve as nutritarians is having a great, our fully health expectancy, with our full physical and mental faculties intact and living our life to our fullest till the end of our life. So we want to have, you know, so instead of dying at 80 and having, since the end, having the ages of 65 to 80 or 70 to 80 being in bad shape, live to be 100 and have the last year, or only the last year or so, be maybe not as physically fit. And the point is that not just extend your life, but extend your years of healthy life. And that's what modern nutritional science makes possible today.
As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I'm sitting at the New York Blood Center, and they have a lot of snacks here for people who donate blood. And we've got Lorna Doones, chocolate chip cookies, a variety of different cookies, and apple juice, and all these white flour, high sugar foods. Is that what we should be eating when we donate blood?
I guess if you're donating blood and you want to have the support the hospital with more sick people, I mean, I don't know if they're purposely trying to make people sick. But, you know, I remember when I went to medical school, they had a McDonald's in the lobby of CHOP, Children's Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. They had a McDonald's in the lobby. And we're saying we're treating kids with childhood cancers, and we're trying to feed them to how they have adult cancers now. But the point here is, and one thing we're talking about, you and me today, is the fact that people have very little understanding of the direction of the food industry went and how it has devastating effects, not just on creating cancer and dementia and heart attacks and strokes, but also on depression and mental illness and lowering intelligence and taking over and making you addicted so you can't, and creating a mental fog of lack of performance and ability to make the right decisions in your life. The point is that food destroys our brain. It doesn't just destroy our body. And so obviously they're feeding foods that I would think are that most modern nutritional scientists and doctors would think that that's very, it's not really favorable to be giving people junk food. Myles Wick is giving cigarettes, whiskey, or cocaine when they take blood. It's the same thing. These foods are brain-destructive foods.
I will tell the nurses that here when I leave. Now, I think this book is timely for many reasons, but especially in the last few days. Well, I mean, in the last few years, we have seen so much violence, and we had another unfortunate big violent episode recently. And you tie nutrition or poor nutrition with violence, with bullying, with crime. How does that happen?
I know, and I just want to state right at the beginning of this conversation for people who are listening that I'm not really giving my personal opinion here. I work very hard to be unbiased, and I'm giving scientific studies and interpreting that data and putting studies together and showing people what the evidence shows. And they, so I don't want people to say, Dr. Furman has his opinion and I have a different opinion. This is really not opinion. Let me state one, what you just said about crime and food. There's a study that was published just recently published in British Journal of Psychiatry, and it showed that the link between candy and junk food and criminal behavior and adult drug use and drug abuse is more closely linked than any other variable studied. In other words, the consumption of candy and junk food links with crime and drug abuse more than lack of parenting, more than poor education, and more than poverty. So the number one biggest parameter linking criminal behavior and we'll talk about mental illness as well, but right now we're talking about criminality and drug abuse, and people should recognize that more than half of the people who are incarcerated in federal prisons are there for nonviolent drug-related offenses. They're there because they became addicted to food when they were young, like sweets and soda, and they turned on to alcohol and more serious drugs later on. And then they couldn't control their addictions. These addictive substances took over their minds. So they were had to break the law to get their drug habits, and now they're in federal prison for their life. And that way we supported you, millions of people in federal prisons because of drug addiction, which in many cases, or I could probably stretch it and say in most cases, it probably started from the addictive foods we eat as children.
Wow. That's just one big wow. And we're seeing so much violence everywhere in so many levels. I woke up this morning to screaming outside on the street. These two people were fighting over a parking spot. And I just kept thinking, what did you folks eat this morning that's making you full of rage?
Or what did they eat the last 20 years of their life, too? I mean, we're talking here about what, you know, it's not just what you eat that day. But, of course, my book, Faster Genocide, is showing that the data showing what you eat affects your intelligence and performance in school and ability to economically move up the ladder and realize the American dream. And the tragedy of especially the vulnerable people in urban areas where they, number one, don't know, they're not taught about the tremendous effect food has on their brain function and their ability to fully realize their potential. And they don't have, and furthermore, they don't have access to the food that could allow them to reach their human potential. So they're left, so they're, you know, so there's so many obstacles in their path for succeeding in breaking out of poverty. And, you know, I'm, of course, as you are, Karen, which we want people to have, to at least have the right information so they have the opportunity to achieve their full potential in health, in emotional well-being, in physical health and longevity. And if a person wants to smoke cigarettes or wants to snort cocaine or wants to eat junk food, of course, we're not taking away that right. But I think that people should be properly informed about the risks. Just like when in the 1940s and the 1950s and 60s, when people were told that smoking wasn't hurtful. It's okay if you want to smoke, but you should be known about the risks, should be well known. And then if you want to choose to abuse yourself, you can. But now we have people don't understand the full magnitude and how serious these risks are. For example, just say one quick example, that people who live in, you know, these urban areas where they eat mostly processed foods and fast foods, they have seven times the risk of a stroke before the age of 45, destroying the lives of young families and vibrant young people. And, you know, so we're talking about destruction of people due to food access, of the food they're putting in their body. And who's talking about this? This is things that should be taught in school, like reading, writing, and arithmetic. And because what's more important? I realize your show is all about food, and it's just the most important thing. Is it what's more important than what we put in our body that makes us, controls our intelligence, our health destiny, our performance, our happiness, whether we're depressed or not, and whether we could become medical cripples, and whether we live or die? What's more important? What food? The food we put in our mouth, you know?
I'm right there with you. You know that. Now, a lot of this book goes back in history and explains a lot of our food system, how we got to where we are today. But you went further and you connected nutrition to how it was applied with eugenics and Nazism and racism. There's so much powerful stuff in this book. I was surprised to read about California and how they promoted eugenics. I mean, there's so much history that, you know, we just don't know enough of.
Right, and that it's could so inform much important knowing history. So, right, so we don't repeat the same mistakes. And also, you know, I had to make the point here that when the slaves were freed, they had a higher amount of centenarians, more people, more Black Americans living to be 100 years old than whites in those days, and that the Blacks embraced education, performed well, they had access to better food back then, of course, and than they have today. But in comparison to Southern rural whites, they were succeeding more economically and health-wise. And so it's important to bring that up because there's so much prejudice and bigotry going on today. And one of these things is thinking that Blacks are physically inferior, like, for example, like they have more heart attacks, more diabetes, more strokes, more dementia, more cancers, and I'm demonstrating that it wasn't always the case. And there's no inferiority because of the color of your skin. The genetic, the genes are the same. We have a tremendous genetic potential. And, you know, even the medical profession, we learn Blacks or African Americans are at higher risk of diabetes. And I just wanted to make that clear that these things we're taught are incorrect, that you know, Black Americans are not at high risk of these diseases. It's the diet that's placed in front of them that places them at higher risk. And this diet is in that formation of destructive of this, you know, condition we're placing the urban blacks in is leading to bigotry and racism instead of pride and accomplishments. And I don't want people to think that they don't have the full opportunity, but we have to grant everybody in America an equal opportunity to succeed in life. And we can only grant equal opportunity for all if we have equal food opportunity for all Americans. And we understand this concept and we work together as Americans to achieve so all Americans have the right to, you know, the right to happiness and well-being. And it's a human achievement.
Equal food opportunity. I would like to think that our government was going to help us in this, but right now we don't feel like we're getting a lot of support in supporting the well-being for everyone in this country, let alone the rest of the world. So there are things that we need to do ourselves. And
right,
one of that is
spreading.
Yeah, doing the best thing we can do on our plates.
Right, I hear what you're saying. You're saying, you know what I... Go ahead.
You know, you go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, you're saying, you know, put on the oxygen mask on yourself first, you know, and that's what I'm all about is, like, being in great health. And since food determines our mental faculties, our ability to think clearly and intelligently, and our happiness, and so we had, and then our ability to affect others, that I really want people to be able to, you know, take that opportunity to take great care of themselves and recognize that these advances in nutritional science are enabling us to be healthier than ever before in human history. We have the knowledge today. We can really have, you know, we can actually tell people that they can live to be 100 years old in good health and with full mental faculties without getting demented, and this opportunity is available for almost everybody if they apply these recent findings in nutritional science.
Another concept you presented in the book that I found fascinating talked about nature and how nature keeps a balance of the species that are on the planet. And when we eat excessively, when we eat a rich diet, nature kicks in so that we don't procreate as well, and it can actually affect future generations. This was fascinating.
Yeah, I you know, I think that was an important point to make because, you know, that people understand that they're taking risks with their own lives when they don't eat healthfully, right? They know that, oh, well, I'm gonna smoke cigarettes or I'm going to, you know, whatever. But they don't recognize that what they're doing is hurting their children in such a profound way as well. You know, that we're talking here about destruction to your offspring when you don't eat healthy. And you're talking about the predator-prey relation that nature has nature has set up a system that increases the probability of survival of a species. Because, and I give the example in the book, when we're talking about the Arctic hare and the lynx, which eats the Arctic hares. And if they eat too many Arctic hares, the body, there's a mechanism through excess protein, excess consumption of animal protein particularly, that has that can shorten the lifespan of the lynx. So they don't consume too many hares, but the hares have been decimated by the lynx, and need a couple of generations to recover and repopulate. So the high animal protein affects our epigenetic changes and affects the offspring's health and shortens their lifespan as well. So they can't eat as many hares, and the hares can come back and repopulate again. And this is a predator-prey relationship that's been shown to be viable in all species of mammals and all predators and preys around the world. And it's passed through in genetic code to humans, and we know that humans that overeat calories and overeat protein particularly shorten their lifespan tremendously, but we're just recognizing now that the epigenetic changes have an effect to damage their offspring's health and to shorten the life of their offspring. And then we're talking about right now we're feeding kids candy and all kinds of junk, and we're, you know, we have the most obese, and, you know, we're promoting, you know, the excessive growth in children by feeding them more protein, and we have all this data to suggest that high protein diets, and we're talking about high animal protein diets, is going to shorten their lifespan considerably, and of course, shorten the lifespan of your children's, of your grandchildren as well. And it's just, this information is very, very important for people to really understand thoroughly. So I think I was glad to have this focus where I could go into speaking a lot of different areas of nutrition. So the book Fast Food Genocide, it didn't tie me down to just speaking on about reversing diabetes or just having a person lose weight, but I really could see have people see the broader picture and how it affects society on so many different levels here.
It's hard to know, and you actually said it didn't matter which came first, the poor nutrition or the repercussions from poor nutrition, where our IQs are affected and our brain capabilities are affected. And somehow it's like a cycle, because if we have no knowledge about nutrition, we'll just go and grab the fast food, and that only aggravates it, and it's like a cycle.
Yeah, definitely.
Where do you break the cycle and stop it?
Well, you know, we could talk about that cycle of how food is so powerful. These foods are designed to be addicting, to have a negative effect on people's brains and keep them addicted to these foods in a vicious cycle, so they don't even think about, or they can't break out or get off the cocaine or get off the sweets or the fried foods. But, you know, on a larger scale here, I think that we have to recognize that our institutions, our institutions of higher learning and authorities are telling people that urban populations of with less economic opportunity, that when they're given access to healthy food and information, they're not going to eat healthy, and it's too late for them. There's nothing we can do about it, because even if we delivered vegetables and beans and nuts to these populations, they wouldn't eat them. And this is that's hard to make. It's too hard that people aren't going to change. And this is what they're teaching in the institutions of higher learning. And one thing I want to make clear in the book, that's false. That's not what we're seeing. We're seeing that when people with decreased opportunity are informed properly of the damage that these foods are causing, and they're given the opportunity to have access to healthy foods at reasonable costs, at fair costs, they make better and they make the right decisions. And it's like they can see people becoming obese and having leg amputations and having dialysis, and they know that people are having, you know, by the way, you have 10 times the increased risk of early life heart disease when you're a regular consumer of fast food. They see people dying around them of food-related issues, and they want a way out. And we're finding, and this is being done all over the country, and especially with my friend Akul Woolbright in Detroit, that when these populations are given good information, taught to them properly, as what they take advantage of this information. They don't want their kids to be in bad health. They don't want to, you know, have all these tragedies happen to themselves and their families. So this is a problem. But as big a problem as it is, there's also hope, because the bigger the problem, if you can identify it, and you can speak to some ways we can solve it, it's tremendous hope. Even though fast food genocide has the word genocide, destruction of a race or destruction of people across our country and across the world through the explosion of fast food. And fast food is now, and processed foods are now, the number one source of calories in America. Most calories consumed in America are from fast food and processed foods. But in spite of all these dangers that are happening, if we can really educate our population, truly give them informed consent, discuss the failure of modern medicine to solve the issues caused by bad food, and by processed food and junk food and sweets and all the stuff people are eating, there's tremendous hope to change things and tremendous hope for betterment of our populations and tremendous hope to lower crime rate, to lower racism, to bring up people in poor economic situations out of poverty. And so there's tremendous hope available, even though, of course, there's billions of dollars spent to oppose this message, it's still tremendously a hopeful message.
It's a hopeful message, and it's a hopeful, delicious message, because the last part of your book includes really wonderful recipes and a weekly food plan. You make it easy. You make it delicious.
Oh, thanks, Karen. You know, and you and I both agree that there's so many great things people could eat if they just were taught properly. My family comes over, you know, my nieces and nephews come over on the weekend or one evening, you know, and have about, you know, 10 family members in the house. So I make them all some nice ice cream. And they say, oh, you know, Uncle Joel, can you make us your ice cream? They're all here today. They just love my ice cream. And it's the simplest recipe. And it's just, you know, take some frozen bananas, put in some real vanilla bean powder made from, like, real vanilla bean. And then I put in a handful of macadamia nuts, you know, a splash of, you know, and it was maybe a little splash of soy milk. And it's so delicious. You know, whatever I'm making, people that friends, family, neighbors, people come over to my house for dinner, they realize that, wow, this is like gourmet food that's healthy for you. And so you, it may take a little more effort to be healthy, but it doesn't take, but you're not sacrificing flavor or taste. We have the best, you know, it's the best tasting food in the world.
It's the best tasting food in the world. Joel, your book comes out October 17th. What can we do? I understand that you're asking people to promote the book on the 17th, tweeting and doing all kinds of social networking. What can we do?
Right. And on the 17th, I'm going to be on the – oh, I think that's the airing of the Dr. Oz show when I'm going to be on the book talking about it. But here's what I'd love people to do. If they could go and pre-order the book on Amazon before the 17th, it'll help – push the book up to the New York Times bestseller list because it's counted. The Amazon pre-orders are counted more heavily towards the New York Times bestseller list. So if they purchase the book before the 17th, it would be better. And then, as a thanks for doing that, if they come to my website, drfirm.com, and they put the code in for their order number, I will give them the chapter of the book that's Fast Food in the Brain. I'll send it to them right away so they can start reading that chapter right away, and do some Facebook Live answering people's questions as well. People pre-order the book.
Okay, that's important. People pre-order this book. Pre-order 20 of them and give them away. This one is a winner. Dr. Furman, thank you so much for writing this book and for joining me again on this program. I love all the work you're doing.
Thanks so much, Karen. My best to you and all your listeners, and looking forward to speaking to you another time.
Okay, be well. Okay, everybody, you got your assignment. We just heard from Dr. Furman, and his new book is called Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. I just touched on a few of the points in the book. It is rich in history and information and everything that you need, either to transition yourself to a healthier diet or to help you share this information with everyone. It's so, so important.